You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, hello there. This is the Comedian's Comedian Podcast celebrating episode 450. 450. And what better guest to celebrate the 450th birthday? Is that how it works? Is each episode, was it all a year in between? I don't know. What better guest than the return of Dara O'Brien to the show, returning after 10 years in this two-part special. You don't need any introduction. He's best known in the UK, if you're not from here, for hosting Mock the Week for years and years and years. Stargazing Live. He's an incredibly smart, erudite kind of polymath. I suppose he's a polymath of a person. And is just so warm and funny and famous and tall. And he can't go anywhere without getting mobbed. And he has time for everyone. And we saw each other at a benefit gig at the Comedy Store some months ago. And it was very pleasing to be collared by Dara and have him say, hey, can I come back on? That's a feather in the cap of this podcast. I was very proud of that. He's a joy. His latest show, So Where Were We, is available on the iPlayer. And it's a very special thing. It's not just a show. It deals with not only missing body parts in a TV show he'll never do, but also an astonishing family revelation, which it really is. When you get comics who... You get two types of... I mean, you get way more than two types of shows at the Edinburgh Fringe or tour shows, what have you. You get, here's a show about a meaningful thing or experience. Or you get, here's someone who's at the top of their game and has been for 20 years plus, just smashing it, doing stuff about whatever. And this is an example of a combination of the two. He's brilliant and he talks sensitively and fascinatingly and in a very, very funny way about this huge thing. The winner, the show won... best tour at the 2023 Chortle Awards, and he's performed it across the world. In the first half of this episode, we are going to discuss Dara's extensive notes that he brought along to the podcast. And please, future guests, if you can turn up with a list of things to talk about, or even send it to me in advance, what a joy that would be for me. The differences, we'll talk about the differences of promoting the show in the UK and in the US, and we'll talk about producing a comedic payoff to a very personal, very emotional story. If you join the Insiders Club at patreon.com/comcompod, you can watch the full episode now. Yes, the full special now. If you're just listening in the regular feed, then you will you can hear this half now, and part two drops next week for the people listening in the regular feed. So here, without further ado, is Dara O'Brien. Have you brought notes?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
What are your notes saying? No one's ever... I mean, a couple of people have brought notes. Matt Ewins famously had one note which said, don't say anyone's name. To avoid himself being... Like, he didn't want to get tricked into espousing any of his real opinions about people. So it was an aid memoir. What do your notes say? Are these items that you'd like to talk about? I love this.
Silence, chickening out, the Vienna model, how long should a show be, revelation and responsibility, truth versus emotional truth, Ipswich v Norwich, that's an anecdote. Post-show revelation, man in Birmingham pub, and what's the other one? And reviewers love that shit.
Mate, I'm so flattered. Should I be flattered? Should I not be flattered because you've planned all of the stuff you want to communicate?
No.
This is so lovely.
Because I think this is the one few times you get to talk about this, you know, actual talk about the mechanics of putting these things together, which is quite enjoyable. I just didn't want to forget, you know.
Great. Well, shall we start with your stuff? And then every so often we come across, every time I find an opening for a curveball, because I've got some stuff as well. But why don't we start with...
Well, okay. Yeah, okay, if you want. I mean, look, the more this... I mean, I've not done this in about 10 years, this podcast.
Yeah.
And you'd say that the last one was kind of a snapshot of how I feel you put together a show and what you do, whatever. And then the one I did most recently, it was different because it had a kind of a more...
Very different show.
Yeah.
Much more personal.
Much more personal, much more... It kind of had a serious part to it as well.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting to talk in terms of the mechanics of how that's done and how they felt performing that for 2 years as opposed to, you know, what I can now call boom, 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 ha, ha, ha.
Well, when you, I hope that becomes as fixed an idea within comedy as what you said before was, it's trust me, I'm a comic.
Trust me, I'm a comic.
I've remembered that as trust me, I'm a comedian. And I've been saying, trust me, I'm a comedian on this podcast for 10 years to people. So now that's now, I've been amplifying that. So now we've got the difference between that and boom, 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 ha, ha, ha.
Boom, 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 ha, ha, ha.
Which presumably is your older method of working. Or not older, but...
No, I'll resume because I'm at the point where I'm about to... The last five shows of this, next fortnight or so, I'm going to America to do the last five shows of this, while at the moment trying to scribble down new ideas.
So the one that you're taking to America is So Where Were We?
So Where Were We?
Which is already available on iPlayer. So you're still touring it, having released it online.
Yeah, but it's only released to the UK. It's very geo-blocked.
Gotcha.
So it's grand. So it's not released in a more general
and,
way.
And the show that I saw, the geo-blocked iPlayer version, yes. is only an hour long. Because I was doing some sort of further reading about the show and this review mentioned loads of bits. I was like, I don't remember that. Oh, God, did I watch the wrong show?
Well, that is a thing in itself. And I think it's a thing that that we probably as an industry may have to work out in terms of how long we do our shows for. Because there's a lot of forces pushing shows to be an hour long at the moment. In terms of specials, in terms of Netflix. Netflix are quite incredibly strict about that if you do that. I'm not in the Netflix stable. But... The American model is very much an hour long for specials, and people write to that. And I've seen younger comics do shows, and they're like, I mean, and they'll be an hour long, and audiences are grand with that as an expectation. Whereas I do a thing which Ed said, yeah, that was referred to me as Dara Breen's model, which is where I do first half and second half, because the force was, presumably, because theatres need... to sell drinks during the intervals.
Yes.
And so...
Oh, you dinosaur. Your model is based on live touring comedy in a theatre.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, fossil Dara.
I totally... And I'm really feeling the sense of... I'm like a song and dance man at the moment. Like, I'm still doing soft shoe show. I'm jazz. And I don't mean in a kind of a artistically... I just mean I'm in a thing which is really a minority interest now.
Yes, well, I wanted to ask you about... what you think your approach would be were you 20 now embarking on a career in comedy in the current setup, the crowd work clips, the Instagram profiles, all of that kind of stuff. Have you given that any thought? Do you recognise that?
Because another force is that Twitter is sliding away. As a marketing tool, Twitter is disappearing really hugely. I found it enormous because 4 years ago I did America and this year I'm doing America and it took a few tweets to mention it and then I would mention, hey, I'm doing some gigs in New York and I would do what I felt were a lot of them, but then 50 people would answer and I would respond to each of them because advertising into America is a bit of a encyclopedia salesman. It's kind of door to door really because people don't really know your stuff over there. Okay. So you're very much trying to seek out the people who do and get them into the room. And so it feels very much like, you know, every tweet that somebody responds, I would go, great, we'll see you there. Looking forward to seeing you. And I would positively reaffirm there and they hope that they're like, oh, I must go then. And I've been doing this process again for America, and you'll get where you used to get 50 responses, you'll get 10 or 5.
So it just
feels like that as a promotional thing. So you're kind of going, okay, great, maybe I should put more effort into something like Instagram. And then you're into clips and you're into videos. And now that there is a TikTok that we started, and we're thinking about packaging up the DVDs and slicing them and snipping them and all that. And also, I'm aware that I have burnt, in a sense, many, many hours of audience crowd work.
Because you, in much the same way as you'll notice we're now videoing this and I'm sitting on 450 episodes that are audio only, which have no use online. You put them on YouTube, no one gives a shit. You're in a similar position in terms of you didn't tape your crowd work.
No, of course not. Because, well, also...
No, I mean, why would you? Of course not.
Yeah, I mean, because it was. I worked in a live medium and that's how we worked. And that was what we do. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yes, it's entrenched in me and it must be even more so in you that you always have to go over that hurdle of, well, don't put it online. I spent ages coming up with either that joke or that approach for crowd work.
Oh, it's interesting.
Don't give it away.
I didn't have quite of that because I never felt that the online clips ever had any traction. That idea that, like, whatever. Well, if I post this on my Facebook page,
everyone who wanted to buy a ticket to your show will immediately watch this grainy phone footage of, I didn't think that ever happened. Okay. But I didn't think I should have a setup at the back of a theatre, first because you're in a different theatre each night, and that is, I'm currently scratching my head going, well, how the fuck would we do that? Yeah. If you're doing the store and they've got a camera just right there, that's perfect. Like, you watch Ian Stone's clips or Laura Lex's clips, whatever it's going, and the camera's in exactly the right place and the sound is perfect. But if you're on a tour, you know, when you're in the Lowry one night and you're somewhere else the next night, look, whatever it's grand. I'm looking forward to the conversation I have with my tour manager / tech guy where I go, yeah, we also need to bring on this rig that we find a seat for. Where, how,
yes,
am I at the back of the room?
That's one of those kind of, like, all of those questions are so easily resolved. But I think simply because they're new and they're not something you've been doing for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, you could fix all of that in a 2-hour meeting and a bit of budget. Like, you probably, I saw Gareth Reynolds, brilliant American comic Gareth Reynolds. He has a person with him who does crowd shots. Whoever he's talking to, he's taping the person in the crowd.
Right, okay.
And you make sure some small print on the ticket says, by the way, make a fuss to a non-existent person if you don't want to be used, you've signed away your life kind of thing. Yeah. And so there's a way of kind of systematizing it where you go, okay, this is just what we do every time. I still haven't done that. I still feel a certain resentment of like, I don't want to turn up at a new material night and put a camera next to the other six cameras at the back with all the other acts on the bill. Loads of people are doing that because from a systematic point of view, you may as well be taping every single minute you spend on stage in case something good happens. And that's the antithesis of comedy in some ways, but it's also, madness not to. In 10 years' time, we'll laugh at this conversation. Yeah, God, I hadn't been. I didn't have a series of drones taping every moment.
Well,
because
after every gig I do, I post a tweet, which is the "you had to be there" tweet, where I talk about the five or six audience members I spoke to and the running jokes.
Yes,
I've
seen those. I like those because they make me feel, oh, I've missed a thing.
Yeah.
And if I had seen the thing, I would enjoy that everyone else had missed it.
Yeah. And there's a touch of like, it's your private gag one last gag with the audience. And sadly, because of the nature of Twitter, that's also getting less response now because there are just fewer people on it. But that was always a nice thing. And I actually, and also because of hashtag, inadvertently a hashtag, I've created an archive of them. I just look up the hashtag and I can see an archive of every gig and every audience chat I've had.
That's nice.
For about 10 years.
Like, and you can get that randomly projected onto a screen when you're on your deathbed. Oh, I remember that was a good one. That was a good bit.
Another accountant. That offshore joke one more time. So like, yeah, but each of those, you know, Matt Rife would have done 10-minute clips out of like whatever, and would be or whomever. I'm sorry, I don't want to pick on this guy who I don't really know. As the thing, but there is a touch of like, oh shit, there's loads. I mean, I did the store for a couple of gigs last year, kind of benefit.
We did one together.
And there's like a 10-minute bit about on one of them. I don't know if that one. With two physicists, a husband and a wife, a nuclear physicist, like whatever, which went on a big old spiel of a thing, like whatever, and you're kind of going, she said, I should probably ring the store. That's the kind of thing that would be really handy. But again, I don't know to what extent it narrows down to the length of clips that people think about, which is audience says one thing, a comedian says one thing back, applause, this is my thing, as opposed to me burbling a 10-minute rant out of something.
Yeah.
And whether that would look like a power move of, wow, you just keep going with the improv, or, oh, I may tighten it up. no one's going to watch.
Well, no one knows, do they? And what everyone's doing is that kind of startup mentality of like, try a thing, iterate it again, try 10 different versions, work out what's the thing for me. Do you feel any kind of, like with me, I always think of that Derren Brown thing where he has to flip a coin and get heads 10 times in a row, and he videos it and he goes, there we go, it's not a fake video, I flipped heads 10 times in a row, how's it done? And then it's a sort of big head scratching thing. And obviously he stayed up and flipped a coin over and over and over and over and over and over showed you the bit.
Yeah.
Just that bit.
Yeah.
To me, there is a sort of sense of that, and I think to us all, with crowd work, if you tape literally every time, every single thing. All you need to do is carefully select the gold and go da 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 da, and you can appear to be a much better comic than you are. Or rather, even thinking in those terms is probably this fossilized way of thinking about it, because actually, maybe contemporary comedy audiences don't care or notice. They just want to build a relationship with a person. Yeah. They go, I saw him say a funny thing. I don't care about the 10 times it went wrong that I'll never hear about. I've built a relationship now. I've invested in this person, and so I can go and see them.
Oh, look, I mean, we all polish our turds before we present them. Like, that's fair enough. I don't think I'd have any objection to that. Look at them. I'm aware that when I do a chat, I generally do next question, next question, next one until I hit a thing, and then I get into a vein of stuff. So it's kind of how I work.
How
do you fit that into a really small thing, like whatever's grand? You know? And so the wider question then is, the model I've been doing for the Echo, which is I do the first half and then I do the second half. Even next week when I go to America, there are rooms in which I'm going, that's not good. They're just going to find that weird. They're going to get to the end of the first half and go, oh shit, do we have to come back in here again and sit again and watch you do more stuff? I feel we've
do you, how much you. Of that is a sort of how much of that is realistic and how much of it is little nervous, anxious comic brain? Okay,
there's a part of it is that. And in certainly there's two of the places I'm playing are traditional theatres, so therefore that feels more normal. Mm-hmm. And they'll go out. And I may make a comment about it. But one of them is a place called The Den in Chicago, which is a 300-seater. I'm doing 300-seater with tables and people sitting at high things. And you're kind of going, no, let's do the 75 or 90-minute version of it where I go straight through.
Okay.
Now, that is other questions as well, because, as you know, the show has this swerve where it gets serious towards the end.
How much of that can we talk about?
We can talk about, I think at this point.
If it's on iPlayer, we can't really spoil it, but equally it was, like, I wouldn't want to give away the ending, but just my hat's off. The ending's so lovely. Do you mean, when people listen to this and then should they go and watch it, at the end, I'd like them to imagine me standing next to them going, it's good, right? Like, it's so lovely. It's so gentle. The little narrative conclusion is so gentle.
Basically, it's the story of finding my birth mother and... Basically, the detective work required to get to what the Irish state threw up to make that difficult. And it centres on one particular instance where I was literally in a room searching files and how they basically, what they had, the hoops we all had to jump through in Ireland to do this. So it is, and then I had to give some sort of short social history because there is one revelation which is quite shocking. Mm-hmm. And then you're aware that I brought them on this and I need to, and your lizard brain, your comedian lizard brain is going, they need to have a certain amount of funny at the end. This needs to...
We've had loads of boom, 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 but where is the ha-ha?
The boom, boom, boom is ha. but there's been... Yeah, so you need to have some sort of thing. And I... Honestly, there was like a counter in my head of going, no, that's too few. It needs to be. They need to have more payoff. They need to have They need a bit more upside at the end of all that. Because it is, it's silence. And it's awkward because silence remains a really tough thing. For me.
Yes, and because you're so used to boom, 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 ha, 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 you're so used to a gag rate and, you know, clever jokes. And also what I really enjoyed in this show is there's some real dafties. There's some real daft little jokes as well in amongst all the... You know, there's not the seriousness. I mean, there's serious moments, there's big jokes, and then there's lovely little dafties. You know, what about press send? You know, I'm already with bit away. But, you know, really, like, I remember watching it, and as I was watching it, I was thinking, Dari, you old silly. Do you know what I mean? They're like really lovely, silly little warmits. But you are calibrated for bang, 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 reaction. Yeah. So talk to me a bit about that feeling on stage where you need to go, they haven't laughed for a while, and presumably there needs to be a little voice going, and that's fine, I'm doing something different. How different was that? How did you manage that?
I had to ease myself into it to a certain extent. I knew the story existed because the story would be something that I would sit people down and open another bottle of wine and go, let me tell you the story, right? And the story, interesting, the writing of it, for the most part, you know, the beats of it, how I found this out, what I decided to do about it, then the whole thing, etc. That's all real. There's very little changed in that. So I would tell people that story, and then I'd say, okay, well, look, that's a story. That's clearly a story that has an arc and an ending and all that, which is grand. So how best to do this? And I Edinburgh came up, the fake Edinburgh Festival, the one in 2021, the one that was an impersonation of a festival.
Sure.
The cosplay Edinburgh Festival, where Edinburgh dressed up as if it had a festival. And there were like 12 shows or 30 shows in total, and none of them were more than 5 days long. And But I thought my plan...
The feeling of audience members walking into the room just relaxed because they hadn't been battered with 1,000 flyers. Everyone had a great time.
It was
cosplay
really
is better than the real thing.
Yeah, it was really nice. 75 people in the cabaret bar, and it was, and so it was. So I thought I'll try it in the cabaret bar not specifically. I will use COVID to do it because it's just when it happened. Mm. But I'll go to Edinburgh and I'll try it in Edinburgh. Now the original plan was to go to Edinburgh and do the show at like midday in a quiet room under my birth name.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I was going to go up to Edinburgh in 2021 and and the show's going to be called My Name Is, and then the birth name, and then do the show, put it in the listings as that, not mention, post it maybe the back of my head or maybe just a general image.
Sure, yeah.
And then just do it.
White knuckle it through four shows of no one there before you start going, hey, has everyone heard? Dara's doing this thing.
The point where I would ring off the curb and go, look, can you get the word out? This is kind of down in my ass.
Can someone
here
leak this?
Yeah, it's got to be really handy if you can do that. But just, I felt, let's take the pressure off it, like, and just tell the story and then just do that. And I thought that would be an interesting way to do it.
Yes.
Like, whatever. Now, whether or not that would work if there was like, four American tourists and a Japanese couple in who didn't know who I was and therefore weren't in on the fact that this is inherently a joke.
Yes, that
while I would walk out and they'd be like, oh, here's that guy Owen who we saw on the poster. let's listen to his story, like whatever the scrap, without it being oh, and then me telling the story.
Yes.
So whether that would have worked, I don't know. But but still, I thought instead, look, I'll just do it in because it wasn't the fact there weren't people around to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't have worked as a coup de théâtre. Wouldn't have worked in the weird festival. And I was about to go on tour, so I just had to go and do it. So
yeah.
So I did 30 minutes of it, and 30 minutes of boom, boom, boom at the start. That is just in my head the phrase, and of the stuff that became the other 90 minutes of the show, and then gear change at the 30-minute mark and into the thing. And it was weird. It was weird to tell a sincere story.
Yes.
Yeah.
And specifically, it must have been weird to, like, you had to learn how to bridge between it.
Yeah.
Because in the show, how does it work when you do the touring show? Is it jokes for the first half and then the story?
No.
Because in the iPlayer, the version I saw, it's seeded throughout. Because I wondered about the decisions there, because you have to bridge, almost like when you're bridging from crowd work to material.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to bridge from funnies about anything to... let's get serious, but not too serious. But I do mean this, and there is a punchline, but it's not an undermining punchline.
Yeah, there was a point. There's because all the shows expand over time. The original version of the show is 50 minutes of audience chat, introduction, post COVID jokes, and then a couple of family stories that are in the first. They're not in the iPlayer version, although interesting, they're in the Irish iPlayer version.
Oh,
there's an Irish cut that we're doing for Ireland that favours more Irishy kind of stuff and includes
release the Irish cut.
Yeah, well, yeah, go to Ireland. You know, it's one of the bonuses of going to Ireland the next year is you can go to the OD player and watch the Irish cut of it. But there is in the longer version, the full version of the show has COVID-y stuff, lots of audience chat, which doesn't make the cut of the thing, and then it has two family stories, a story about my father and a story about my mother, which are just, funny things that happened as a child. And they are, in some ways, they were more difficult because they're not killer. They're not as good as stuff that I would normally have in. But I want them in, A, because it's one callback to one of them, but also it's to give them their due. It's to put something in that is about the actual parents who raised me, because everyone's so excited about the whole new thing.
Yes, of course.
So you put in a thing about, because both stories are about, well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Here's the time my father did a funny thing. Here's the time my mother did
lovely.
A thing.
Yes,
so you put in
yes.
a thing, like just a story that adds to the whole, I was raised by these people and these are who they are. And
that puts us more in your shoes as the person for whom these, to us, they become your actual parents.
Yes, exactly.
In the way that to you they are your actual parents.
And so, and you see similarities and stuff like that, like whatever, because there's all nature nurture thing. That goes on anyway in this whole debate. And then the first half, second half is just 30 minutes. 30 minutes of material. But the material moved towards, it was about physical health and all that, the stuff you saw, and then it moved into a whole there's a story about an argument with my wife or something like that, like whatever. Oh, there was a routine, a really nice routine that bridged them perfectly about fight scenes in movies with like John Wick and Nobody and these kind of films where okay. a middle-aged man suddenly remembers that he's an assassin.
Oh.
And I have a lovely routine with that, but just the time it went, but it holds you about the rules for fighting five guys. Yeah. Because apparently there are rules for fighting five guys. Okay. I think there's a Jack Reacher moment where he explains, I'm going to hit you.
Oh,
then
yeah.
I'm going to hit you.
Listen, I'm across all of this territory. Yeah, okay, fine. 100%. Yeah.
Well, I had a whole thing about that about, because I get the audience to guess and they go, no, you hit the smallest guy next. And then the rest of them are really confused.
Yeah.
And they're going, why'd you hit him? And they're like, he's not even in the fight. He's my sister's boy. He's just looking after the coach. Oh. And I have a long thing about that. And now we're going to fighting and fighting at home. And that led into something about kids that led into, you know, and I was a bit like that as well. And I remember saying to my dad once, you know, and that led into the story.
Yes.
And so it
yes.
all bridged. But then everything else expanded and that had to be dropped. And then it became a little bit of a point where I go, where I, at the end of the first half, I go, my mother's a great storyteller, because that was the whole thing. My mother is a bullshit artist of a storyteller. and I'd say, and I've got an amazing story to tell you, and that'll happen in the second half.
Oh,
and I would
lovely.
Walk off.
Okay.
And then I would just go, I would do loads of stuff about that. I'd do the whole testicle stuff. Then I would essentially go, right, here's the story. And the story starts, in a slightly sideways way, and the thing, but like, because I just had, the bridge all got lost.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Dara. I mean, come on. I could just talk to him all day. I could talk to him all day and all week and all month. He's just a joy. Coming up in the second half, we're going to talk about building and releasing tension during a confessional stand-up show. We're going to talk about keeping elements of a personal life away from the stage. What can you share? What do you share? What do you choose not to? And we're going to talk about the burden of touring with a screen. A reminder that you can watch the show that we're discussing in detail. It's called So Where Were We? And you can find it on iPlayer, or I'm sure if you're outside of the UK, you can nick it or use a VPN or something. I'm not your mum. You can find out more about Dara at daraobrien.com. Notice that's Brian, not Brian. So it's B-R-I-A-I-N. That's quite hard to say. He is at daraobrien on Twitter. And he also is youtube.com/@. And I don't know how they do that. youtube.com/@daraobrienofficial, and that is worth checking out just for the very funny introductory message where Dara introduces you to his YouTube channel. There is also, he's doing, if you hear this in time on St Patrick's Day, he's at the O2 on Saturday the 16th of March. Dara O'Brien and friends celebrating St Patrick's Day with Deirdre O'Kane, who I've never had on the show. I'd love to get Deirdre on the show. Andrew Maxwell, and of course Ardlo Hanlon, and he's another one. Someone put me in touch with Ardlo, he'd be great to chat to. So that sounds like an absolute laugh. You can join me for a double bill at the McCumcliffe Comedy Festival on Saturday the 4th of May, where Redacted returns. I imagine it's sold out by the time you hear this. There may be one or two left or returns. That is the live ComCom flavoured dickabout with multiple guests that we all love. We've not done that for years, so really looking forward to that. And then that night I'll be doing, at Mac on the Saturday night, I'm doing my award-winning climate comedy show, Spoilers, which is both a comedy show and also about the climate crisis, but not in a way that makes you want to top yourself. Links in the show notes to all of that. I'm also at Wells Comedy Festival later in May, so if you're in Wells, come and find me there. And I have a reminder for you, if you probably no longer need reminding, but we may as well. The Insiders Club, the Patreon for this show, is now moving to Patreon. It is now a Patreon. So when people say join the Patreon,
I can say that because this is now exclusively on Patreon. Full video episodes, extra content now in video as well as audio going forwards, access to the full back catalogue of extras with a new RSS feed and new membership stuff, guest announcements and what have you, and a monthly Q&A. February's is out now. That's a Q&A, but with a super fun title. So now let's get back to Dara O'Brien.
I've got it. My show at the moment is about the climate crisis, and there is a joke 5 minutes in, which is an incredibly important joke, the subtext of which is, I'm not going to patronise you about the climate crisis. Yeah. And if I don't tell that joke, it's 20 minutes of getting them to rewarm to me and trust me and stop worrying. But it does like a very specific, I've never known a show that has such a specific, of my own work, that has such a specific, like, if you mess this bit up, if you miss this, if you remove this, it's a whole different show. And for me, there was an equivalent sort of system in your joke about your dad telling you that they'd already told you loads of times and you'd forgotten.
Yeah.
Do you know, that joke sort of says, I'm fine with this. Do you know what I mean? It establishes an emotional tone for us.
Yes.
Your relationship to finding out.
Yes. Do you know what I mean?
I just think it was a really important...
Oh, that's interesting. Cool. That's sort of inadvertent. I mean, I think it should come through that I was very content when I did the search and all that sort of thing. I mean, it was slightly irritating. There was one particular review said, I didn't see what the emotion was. And you kind of go, almost the point is that there wasn't, it's not a big music.
Well, that's
swells.
What I mean about the ending.
Yeah.
You know, that the gentleness of it is like, it's not a sort of salacious, my big story.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's an important thing that's happened to you, but you sort of treat it gently and respectfully, and it's...
Well, there is. I mean, I do more explicitly in later versions go, this is the point where you would expect music to swell.
Sure.
And the sensation of jigsaw pieces falling into place. and I say, and that's not what, when you meet somebody who you've never met before, and even though you have this is your mother thing, you're like, hello, hi. You're like a total stranger. So it's really awkward kind of thing, whatever. So the awkwardness, I could lean in more to that, but I think people don't really want you to be cold about it. There is interesting. She did see it eventually. She saw it on the telly, and there was one line.
She saw it on the telly.
She saw it on the telly.
Okay.
She didn't see it live. Yeah, partly because where she is, I wasn't touring. Her kids. A couple of the kids have seen it, other people around have seen it, close to her have seen it. I've kind of half siblings who came along. It's kind of funny because I met the series of half siblings when I went out to see them, and they were all very, great, and what do you do? Okay, grand, blah, 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 joke. Yeah, okay, great. And then they came on to a show and they had a few pints and they went, but we remember when you moved to London, we were all thinking, now, like, he's done very well in Ireland, but will he do well? And I'm going, you knew. So, oh, yeah, of course he knew who you were.
I'm just so clear on that story. They pretended, when you met them, they pretended not to know.
They were very kind of like, we do. They didn't want to come in and, I love your work. They were
of course.
Oh, okay,
they want to meet you as a person. Yeah.
And then later went,
of course we know who you are.
Yeah. Oh, that TV, you remember, because you were, and then you left the show and moved to England, you know. And it was like, yes, that was the time. There's one line, there was a one line where I'm a little bit casual with this. Do you love me now, mammy? Is there a line?
Yes.
There's a line there.
Oh yes, the kind of your inversion of how it could have played out.
And I think there's an implication that's why this happened, and so that is one of my points on my list of things to get to is, what is your responsibility when you do a show which is revelatory? What is your responsibility to the people around you, the people who are mentioned in the show, because a lot of people would be the artist has every right, and I, you know, and my folks are all very, look, it's your story to tell. Because it was going quite public in Ireland, which is a small country, and the whole thing. But I give no identifying stuff away. And there are, you know, and there are further parts of the story which may, you know, reflect badly or, you know, and you're kind of very aware that I don't know if I can do that. And I find it very hard to shake the sense of that. What is my story and what is not my story? If you know what I mean.
And presumably that's something you haven't come up against before in your work. I mean, one would imagine that, you know, you've got a partner, and if you do jokes about your partner... Then you've got to clear it with them. Or, I mean, do you? Have you encountered that?
Yes, yeah, so she's come into the shows after that, and I said, what do you think? She said, well, I don't remember saying all of that.
Yeah.
So she gets the full run of, like, and then my wife said to me, boom, 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 like, whatever. She does get to do those lines that, you know, she possibly has not said, or that, yeah. that I did was on the stairs as we left, kind of lines.
Yeah.
The so yeah, but there is, but I wouldn't give stuff away. The that much very personal stuff, because she has her own, you know, like the kids are very unidentified from it. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, and my family, my actual like, they're a bit like, I don't particularly want it to be, you know. So I have always had a bit of that. A bit of, yes. I'm sort of careful in what I, you know, go on about. Not that the, yeah, it's weird. I mean,
but this is a wider responsibility, not just because if you have upset someone, you're not necessarily, like if you annoy your, like I live in fear of the day my son is old enough to watch right. my show on YouTube that's about how hard I found the first couple of years of parenting. Mm. Love you, mate. Yeah. when you live with people, when they are your children or your partner,
yeah.
you can have a back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, you can go, they can say, I'm not, I felt like that maybe overstepped the mark. And you go, I'm really sorry, I won't do that bit again, or I'll phrase it differently, or we'll have a chat. Yeah, and then you'll see them the next morning, and then the next morning. But with someone who is, you know, your birth mother, who you're not necessarily in constant contact with, that's then it becomes more of a, there's more weight to it, because there won't necessarily be that sort of social
absolutely.
Feathering.
Absolutely. And so I speak to her a few times through the year. It's grand. I must go and see them again some stage. I'm very aware that I've spoken about them more than I've spoken to them, because I've been doing the show every night about them. But I'm also very aware that I can't drop into these people's lives, go, well, wow, how amazing this is, and then race to a theatre and do the thing. Right. Now, there was
lovely to see you. I'm just going to pop out and talk about your that, length. For
oh,
two
that's
hours
that's
to
good. Can I? Sorry, say that again. Would you mind if I explain?
What a gear change, and what an extraordinary experience for them to not only have. It's like a multiplication of the experience of being tracked down by a baby that you had to give up. And then that person is famous TV celebrity.
And then he's on the Late Late talking about it.
Yes.
And that must be a bit weird. I mean, like, she would open the papers and that would be interviews with me. Some of which she enjoyed, some of which she did not, I think. And it was actually different, but, like, I was very aware of it, like, because she'd say it, like, whatever, if she was, you know. And I would have to go, yeah, that's not a reflection on you, but that is how the process was for me, and it was kind of thing. But the, it's
been... Did you, in the creation of the show, were there things that you took out? Because it's a solid laugh, but actually,
they just never get in. But things that were her story, to a certain extent, I felt I couldn't. I think that in any way someone would go, I'm very aware of somebody like being disparaging about her, you know, in a Catholic Irish, well, she got into trouble kind of you know, kind of thing. So that was very aware of that, like, whatever. I'm also, because there's nothing identifiable, even to the extent that there is a thing that was identifiable. I mean, literally, because I say a name and I give a date or whatever in terms of doing the search, I changed the letters that are in the thing.
Yes.
So I'm not, because a woman from that office came and said, you know, you've given away, and you can now walk into the office and just look you up.
Yes, I did wonder about that, because someone in the office obviously gives you a little, like, the point of that bit is the system is so, legally stacked against you, trying to find out your birth parent. That you have to throw yourself on the mercy of the very kind people who work in the archive, who might then go, and I was like, oh, you've told everyone that, is that person going to get in trouble for telling you?
I'm also worried about that slightly. Yeah, it's grand. And there's like a further thing where I give them a tip as well, like whatever. I you know, slip them a few. Yeah, thanks for that. Like, whatever.
Flee the country if you
need
to.
Yeah, who's made which the guy exactly going, oh yeah, no, there was no question of, oh, you shouldn't. It was like, yeah, there we go. It's grand. Sure. And like, but you don't want to get, no, you are aware that you don't want to get
obfuscate the details of them. This tall man, yeah, with a punk haircut. He was the guy,
sort
I remember
kept
him.
It vague, but you would not find it difficult to narrow that down. So I wonder about that, like whatever. And then there's, because you don't want to get into the Hassan Minhaj kind of a thing of,
for sure, yes.
Yeah. Where
that's the comic who told some deeply impactful stories about racism, some of which turned out not to be entirely true.
Or not to have had to him. Yeah.
And but were kind of delivered to the audience as if it was a real thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you want to get the Edinburgh Festival, there's an awful lot of that around. I think he was doing it at quite a high level about a very serious subject.
Yeah, there was. And like, and I, Yeah, and I've been in conversation with some comics who do very conventional shows, whose name I won't say. Like, we're going, oh, it's really unfair to have that. And you're kind of going, I don't think it was unfair. I think it was...
Did you, in the writing of So Where Were We, did you kind of consult comics who'd been through confessional things and sort of go, how do you navigate this? How do you tell that story without giving that away?
I mean, I could have thrown a rock in the Pleasance courtyard at any given time to do this.
Need a bit of help here, lads.
Yeah. No, form a queue.
Lads there in a non-gendered sense.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Oh, no, the Irish sense is Irish women are a great bunch of lads. There is such a proliferation of those, I suppose. And I've been to a few of them. I've been to the ones, so I've seen a lot of them. In Edinburgh in particular, obviously. I didn't. And also because the story was a story I told. I started, my benchmark was the stories I would just tell you. And the events are kind of... The question was, when you build that silence is a tension, and how you release that tension is then the question of how cheaply do you release the tension? Or, mm-hmm. I mean, there is one line in it of which I am insanely proud. And it is, I think, in some ways, the only genuinely funny thing I've ever done. That I read out the details on this document I have about the family stuff, and I go through the whole thing, and it's total silence. And I've done it, 170 times now. It's absolute silence in the room. And I said, your mother was this, your father was this. They've known each other for a while. And I say, let me get the wording of it right, because I haven't done it in a couple of months. I've done this 150 times, or whatever the number is at the time, and the response is always the same. Always, always go, oh, the glasses are new.
Yeah, I remember.
I take so much joy.
It's glorious.
And I have a whole thing of going, I worry, I go pat, 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 because I'm not long wearing glasses, but 3-4 years wearing glasses.
Yeah.
So actually they are. If you haven't seen me, you've not seen me wear them. Because
that's clear. Readers. We've got to point that out for the listener or the viewer who hasn't seen the special yet. You do put glasses on.
I put glasses on to read.
We all think, oh, the glasses are new, but we don't notice that we've had that thought. And then how many minutes later is it? It's such a long way away from... It's not like half an hour away.
No. It's the length of the reading of the thing. And then there's a lot. I'll give a pause and a beat. Like whatever. Yeah, so it's not too long. Other ones, there are, I like a call. Callback. I've done callbacks to previous shows in other shows. This one, like, I held it back on that. But that moment is why I say it's the only funny thing I've ever done, because the tension is so there, and it's such a release of tension, and it's such a benign. Oh, God, we're all on tenterhooks. This line is
and,
so.
And what's lovely, that line, the punch of that line, the victim of that line is like, you're trying to express a really important thing to us, and we're all implicated in the fact that we are listening. But the main thing we noticed was the glasses. It's a way of not just puncturing the tension, but kind of there's a humility to it of like accepting that what we really notice, like our forebrains are noticing.
In this huge thing,
really good.
It is the only one that feels like a theatrical laugh, like a tension releasing laugh, rather than here's a smart idea. You put these two ideas together, isn't strange, like whatever, which is a kind of a comics kind of like, I'll come up with an interesting contrast, whatever.
On the subject of theatrical laughs, I had Mike Birbiglia on the podcast recently. Perfect, yeah. So he is someone who... Like the way so much of his material, you could look at him from one direction and go, oh, this is a stand-up comedian who has positioned himself as a storyteller and is the funniest storyteller you've ever seen. Because actually, secretly, he's a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
But then also there's a way in which the nature of the jokes that he tells, so many of them, you don't really notice that they're jokes, or you don't notice that they're observations, because they are a storytelling device where he lets the audience get ahead of him and make his own conclusions. I don't know why I bring him up. I just think that when I think of that as a storytelling show, one of the things that Mike does is to use kind of theatrical elements in the stage show. You know, huge. I don't know if you saw The Old Man in the Pool. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Did you consult anyone sort of theatrically minded in the making of this show? Like, is there a universe in which you kind of went, this takes place in the house and there's a set and what have you.
Or yeah, is that sort of thing? I had a conversation with Ed, for example, and Ed at the moment is currently touring a show about his brother.
I haven't seen it, but I really need to see that show. It's very, very good.
And Ed saw the show and went, he said, I would have made the entire second half about this story. And I consciously went, no, I'm not going to do that because that would involve, because I know how long the actual story is, and that would involve me building in, which is absolutely a perfectly fair model, diversions and sidetracks and stuff like that, like whatever from it. And I just wanted to do it in its own length. Now, I think if you do it theatrically, I think you'd do that. You'd start with something about this and you'd set it all up, and then everything around that, the knee operation material, the testicle stuff, the would then find some organic, you'd write it with so the whole story was about that. And perhaps as a thing, before I go to Chicago and I'd have to do that, I should think of going, I wonder how you do the entire thing like that. You possibly could. But I just felt I wanted to do just as was, and then have it as this gear change into the serious story that then leads to a thing. But I also was aware that I got to bring this out loads of different places. And this may be, again, I'm a 90s comedian, you know, I don't think in terms of like the site specific stuff, because I know it's going to travel. The previous show had a screen. I mean, I brought a screen around the place because there was a bit where I went through this thing I found on the internet about my death online, and I went through it line by line. I'd snipped all the lines as big routine, and click, 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 click. And some stage somebody will tell me how much the screen cost.
I was just about to say, cost. I imagine the screen was an expensive ball egg.
Yeah, hugely. I mean, in fact, Ed's touring with it now, as far as I know, and it may have been Sean Locke's screen before. Yeah. It's gone through a couple of hands, that screen. At one stage, it was in my house, and we put it in the garden and then show movies on it with the same setup just to get some use out of it, which is great. Yeah. But Pirates of the Caribbean in the garden, but you've got to wait till it's quite late. And so your neighbours are hearing bum, bum, bada, bum, 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 like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. But anyway, and then you go to Canada and America, for example, and it's suddenly really expensive because Teamsters essentially have to come in and set the whole thing up. It's not like your guy can do it. Yeah. You have to hire it everywhere you go and become things. Sometimes it's amazing because you'll play cinemas in some of the gigs in Norway, in Russia, one of the gigs in Iceland just happened to be in a cinema, and they said, well, we'll just do
chuck
the screen.
It on the cinema.
One where I did with an 80-foot screen behind me, and because the holding still is of me shouting, like whatever, and I'm in front of it with a mat, and it's like Citizen Kane. It's amazing. But a lot of the time it was a ball ache, and it just is. I mean, and I can hear my agent's eyes rolling when I go, oh, I've written a piece that involves blank. You know, the walking stick, for example, there's a walking stick we need to carry around. Easiest thing in the world. It's in a bag over there because it goes chuk, 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 and collapses. We even joke about how it goes chuk, 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 and collapses. I am aware. Years ago, I've told him about this. I met George Egg on a train. We were going to Cardiff, and he's a joke with a bowling ball.
Oh, it's a great joke.
Wow. I hear this going, you know. So it was always my honour to keep it. So I didn't want to go. And yes, it could. And in fact, I had a friend of mine who's a documentary maker who said, you're thinking about this, you know, you're thinking about selling this as a show. You should be doing it as a whole thing. The only thing is, I think I've told the story so often now in certain places that, you know, the notion of repackaging it again doesn't interest me.
When you tell a story, when anyone tells a story about something important in their life, you, in the telling of the story, you kind of process the information, you process your thoughts about it, I suppose. Is there something about taking something sort of personal and a source of fascination to you and it's kind of got a source of identity and turning it into a 170-day tour? Is that like an extreme version of processing it? Like, does it make it easier to get your head around it? Is there a therapeutic?
I suppose there is an element of like whatever, because I've told so often that I think I probably need to take a break from it to find out how I actually feel. Yeah. Because I've done the practiced emotion of it so often.
Sure.
I mean, that was always my fear with the thing. I mean, it was a joke years ago about being angry about stuff in a kind of a Lewis Black angry rant kind of a thing, that could I genuinely sustain that, you know? And like, I'm obviously pretending anyway, like whatever, but I remember joking about this to Paul Provenza once, because he was doing some gigs over here and I had a routine, and we kind of crisscrossed at the period. And me, I had a routine about balloon safaris, and I was going, man, I'm not that angry about the balloon safari. Like that. But I'm like there going, oh, like, you can't know. Who is an animal from above?
Someone, was it in Tony Allen's book? He said something about the it might be from a different book. It was like the quintessential 80s comic rant was, I'll tell you what pisses me off about cheese graters. Do you know what I mean? It's like that was the birth of contemporary stand-up comedy.
Yeah, so you know, you're pretending at the best of times. Do I feel differently about it now? I mean, I have time to think about it every night, because the show is both... I'm so used to doing it now, whatever, that I do have time to gauge how I feel about it. Like but I think I need to step away from it, because I've talked about this particular instance so much that I need to actually go and see if I'm going to, you know, forge a relationship with these people and keep in contact with, you know, how that's, you know, what is the, what this process has genuinely led to in terms of a thing. But yeah, so because I've just been trapped in this moment of this is the revelation.
I wonder if there is. Is there the risk of a sort of untherapeutic effect of it, whereby you're like, these people, like you said, if you've talked about them more than you've spoken, like to a them. Lot more than you've spoken to them, they now, they're sort of characters in your head. You know that thing we all tell, we meet someone, we tell ourselves a story about who they are, and then we treat them as if they are that person we've imagined.
Yeah.
Like, you've done that 170 times now.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I've narrowed them down. I put them in a box, and when I finish the show, I'll put the box away. Like, and so I have to actually take a genuine human.
Remember what human
emotion is. And go, oh, well, these are actual people. I have to go. It's interesting. I have to work out how this. Look, in 2 weeks' time, I get to find out what this is as I kind of, you know, put a dust in. I find it very difficult. I find it quite compartmentalized. I never got the write a new show while doing the current show. I like to finish this one off and then move on. But I will put this in a box and then see what the actual upshot of it is.
So that was Dara. Part two of this special is out next week, so stay tuned. Remember, if you're halfway through it, you can zip off now and watch So Where Were We on the iPlayer. If you get this in time, go and see Dara and friends celebrating St. Patrick's Day at the O2. So, more on this next week. I'm just going to quickly thank the Insider producers, and then I'll have a little chat at you, and then I will see you next week, unless you're in the Insider gang, in which case you can watch the whole thing right now. So thank you to our Insider producers, Sam Allen, Jay Lucas, Gary McClellan, Dave, Miles Walsh, Ashley Stewart, Mike Sheldon, Nick Waite, Andres Purdy, Caroline Schmidt, Jonathan Stewart, Richard Lucas, Paul Swaddle, James Bury. And a big thank you to our very special, very fancy Insider executive producer, Neil, it's a deal, it's a steal, Peters. So thank you to all of those. There are other levels of Insiders as well, but only the Insider producers get their names read out. Thank you to everyone that's joining. Thanks to everyone that is switching from the previous models on Orsound, PayPal and Moonclerk. We're getting there, and I cannot tell you, 12 years in, 450 episodes into the podcast, I can't tell you how fun it is and how clean as a whistle it feels to get this stuff done. Like, it's, you know what I mean? To like simplify and deduplicate and all this stuff. I feel I should post-amble at you in celebration of the fact it's the 450th. It's not a big birthday. I tell you what I'll say. What I'll say is this. You're very, very grateful, very, very grateful. Would you like me to be a bit more obsequious, sir? Very grateful for your continued patronage and listenership and what have you. Obviously. I remember about 50 episodes ago, I was sort of a bit kind of in the wilderness thinking, well, I've done 400, what do I do, another 400? And I had a bit of a wobble about it. Also, it was roughly this time last year, it was April Fool's Day last year, I think I tweeted something that said, hey, thanks a lot, that's the end of the podcast, bye. And down the left-hand side, the letters spelt April Fool. But look, everyone missed that, and everyone was like, oh, nice one, see you then. I think I was a bit internally kicked by that. I think I sort of went, oh, right, no one would mind. I think that was me doing a job on myself. I since then have heard lots of you get in touch to remind me of how much it means. No one's actually pleaded with me to keep going. But my point is, this podcast has been in existence for so long, I was exhausted.
I felt a bit cheesed off with the sort of all the production things taking up so long and the bite it took out of my life. And then I had a few conversations. I realised that the conversations, the interviews that I do on the pod, I want to do them forever anyway, so I'm going to keep doing them forever. And I had some real belter interviews, and I just came away from it. I basically had a break. I just had a break and felt amazing about it and got right back into it. And I'm really enjoying it. And of course, the other big thing that's happened is that having said goodbye to wonderful, wonderful producer Nathan, I now have a whole different way of looking at the podcast, because producer Callum is not only sort of much more of a kind of active production role whereby we are jointly making decisions on things and building, growing the show and doing online clips and video and all of these other sorts of things. But also he's sort of largely co-producing my life. So let me take this moment. This will be weird because you're editing this, but leave this in. Let me take this moment on the occasion of the 450th episode to say a big thank you to producer Callum, who is continuing to make a pretty fundamental change to how I get everything done. So the wider lesson there for everyone is that having help is good. Having help is good, and having the right help is brilliant. And recognizing that you don't need to do everything yourself, that is a good thing. Having a holiday, having a rest from something with which you've been completely obsessed is also good. I hope I keep doing it for another 450. How long would that take? Let's just do some maths. Let's assume we don't do every single episode. It's not really 50 a year, is it? It's more like realistically 40 a year. So we're looking at 25 divided by 4, which is 6 and a bit, which is 6 years. So then I'll be 52. Right, I think I'm going to do a cut-off at 55. Is that fair? So I reckon we can probably make episode 1,000 coincide with my 55th birthday, and then I'll set fire to the archives in a special ceremony. Is that fair? Thank you to everyone. Thanks for your continued listenage. And thank you to all my pals with whom I do Dungeons and Dragons on a Monday night, because that's come back recently. And Christ, I just spend the whole time crying with laughter as they variously lick potions off the floor. It's basically just, it's just six men getting in a room and telling made-up stories to each other about licking magic potions off the floor. And if that's your sort of thing, then I hope you manage to do that as well. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Rob Smouton, for the music. Susie Lewis for the logs. Thanks, Dara, for a wonderful interview. Second part coming soon. And thank you, dear producer Callum, for having such a positive effect on the forward motion and momentum of not just this podcast, but pretty much everything I'm doing. Cheers, buddy. Let's all try to retain a consistent sense of self if it's useful and if, as they say in yoga, if it feels good to do so.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.